Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, I think it would be very tempting if the president said to Justice O'Connor, you could help the country now. She has received so much adulation that a confirmation proceeding would be more like a coronation.
Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter on CBS Face the Nation yesterday actually speculating that if Rehnquist retires, maybe the president could lure Sandra Day O'Connor back to the bench with an appointment to the position of Chief Justice. And with that, we welcome Emily Bazelon from Slate.com to join us as the Supreme Court Retirement Watch never goes on summer holiday, or so it appears. Emily is a contributing editor for Legal Affairs. Hi, Emily. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much.
And, you know, I have a computer screen up here with the wires, and it's 10:21 and 57 seconds, and still no announcement from anyone named Rehnquist.
Yeah, this is the most anticipated resignation. There have been so many...
Or non-resignation.
Exactly, or non-resignation, precisely.
So it's funny how all of the Washington press corps seems to be on tenterhooks about this. You know, he has a responsibility after a certain point, doesn't he, to end the silly speculation and either say whether he will or won't before the beginning of the next term?
I think that that would certainly put a lot of us at ease who are kind of waiting on his every breath. But it's possible. Chief Justice Rehnquist is supposed to be currently undergoing treatment for thyroid cancer, and it's possible that he's waiting until the end of that course of treatment to make a decision about whether he would be able to sit for an entire another term this year. And so it's possible that he could decide to make a decision about this in September. It might be nice if in the meantime he let people know that's what he's thinking, but this is all private medical information that Supreme Court justices have no responsibility or obligation to disclose.
There's even some talk of a threefer with liberal justice John Paul Stevens, 85, healthy as far as anyone knows, that even he might step down. This has been in some of the press. That's not going to happen, is it?
I doubt it. Justice Stevens has already hired one law clerk for the 2006 term, and it seems unlikely that he would have been taken that step to plan that far in advance if he were imminently planning a retirement. He's also a staunch liberal, and it's unlikely that he would want President Bush to pick his successor.
Let me play you a clip of New York Senator Chuck Schumer, a member of the Judiciary Committee, from NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, on what he hopes will happen once this nomination process gets going in earnest.
I've been saying over and over again, I hope for a consensus nominee. We know it'll be a conservative nominee, but the kind of conservative who everybody can support.
So there's new language from a relatively liberal member of the Senate, a conservative who everybody can support. In divided Washington, you don't hear words like that very much. What does Chuck Schumer mean?
I think he's talking about this idea of a 100-0 candidate, someone who every single senator could make peace with, if not feel thrilled about. And I think there are conservatives like that on the bench or in the Senate in places that President Bush, you know, obviously is looking to. But the short list that the media has been hearing about from the White House does not include a whole lot of names like that.
Is Alberto Gonzalez, the attorney general, a 100%, a 100-0 consensus candidate?
I don't think so. When Gonzalez was confirmed as attorney general in February, the vote was 60-36. And one would imagine that while some Democrats are keeping quiet and sort of hoping for a Gonzalez nomination to the court because he is seen as a possible moderate on abortion and affirmative action, one would assume that his record on torture and detention related to the 9/11 detentions might cause some senators to really think twice and to continue to oppose his ascendance.
You know, the president made a big show last week of defending Gonzalez from attacks by the right because he's seen as too soft on Roe. But I think getting lost in this is how genuinely dismayed some people on the left are, mortified about Gonzalez in some very significant other ways, most specifically his involvement with the so-called torture memos and his view, very specifically his view that the president can order secret detentions and trials without even being reviewed by the Supreme Court. And this concern is not getting very much media attention. Is it all politically irrelevant because Roe is all that matters in the public square right now?
I think it has to be politically relevant, and I think you're absolutely right about the facts that are going to sort of surface more if Gonzalez is actually chosen. The LA Times wrote an editorial last Friday calling him a, quote, disastrous choice for the court. So there's starting to be a little bit of pushback. The other thing which I imagine might start to come into play is the view of the rest of the world. You know, that's not something the Bush administration normally pays a whole lot of attention to, but one would imagine that viewed from abroad, where the detentions in Guantanamo and the abuses in Abu Ghraib have just, you know, generated an enormous amount of outrage, that the notion that the man who was really, one of the men who was at the center of creating the legal foundations for these sorts of abuses would then become a member of the nation's highest court, that's really going to give a lot of people pause. And I wonder if that sort of pushback will have some effect.
We can take some phone calls on WNYC for Emily Bazelon, legal affairs contributor to Slate.com, on the Supreme Court appointments and retirements. I say retirements, retirement and maybe retirements to come. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's look at your article on Slate about the front runners on Bush's shortlist and their judicial histories on Roe versus Wade. And let's start with Alberto Gonzalez. Why does the right distrust him so on this?
Well, Gonzalez, when he was a member of the Texas Supreme Court, took place in four different cases that were tests of a statute Texas had passed about kids and teenage girls having to notify their parents if they wanted to have an abortion. And what the statute said was that a girl could come before a judge, and if she could prove that she was, quote, mature and sufficiently well informed, she was entitled to have an abortion without notifying her parents. And Gonzalez's position in these cases was that he needs to be very carefully applying the statute and to look at the evidence these girls were presenting, and that in one case in particular, there was a 17-year-old who he believed had met the burden of the statute, and so he was ready to grant her what's called a judicial bypass so she could have an abortion without telling her parents. And he used fairly strong language in his opinion. There was a dissent in this case, not written by but joined by Priscilla Owen, who has since been one of President Bush's nominees to the Federal Appeals Court in the South.
And one of the ones who was the subject of all that filibuster debate.
Exactly. And she is a staunch opponent of Roe and of the federal right to abortion. And she and another judge wrote that they felt that the teenager had not at all met this burden and that this teenager really hadn't shown that she'd considered alternatives like adoption. And they really seemed to want to impose a fairly high test and standard for this girl to meet. And Gonzalez accused them of, quote, unconscionable judicial activism. So it's not so much that what Gonzalez said, in his opinion, was so controversial, because if you were applying the Texas statute, it seemed that this girl probably was entitled to have this abortion, and there were a majority of the Texas court that agreed with Gonzalez. But by taking this step to really sort of strike back at the far right wing of the Texas court, he seemed to indicate that overturning Roe would not necessarily be something that he would be in favor of, although he did also say that the ramifications of the Texas statute and even of the court's decision might be personally troubling to him as a parent.
Let's take a call. Ted in Manhattan has a call on Alberto Gonzalez. Hi, Ted. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian, and hi, Ms. Bazelon. I think that the to-do over Gonzalez from the right, all the shouting and screaming that he's too moderate on Roe versus Wade, I'm beginning to think that that's simply a ploy. It seems to me that, Karl Rove is very savvy, knows how to manipulate perception. I think he's gotten together with a lot of the Dobson types, gotten them to make a big stink over things like Roe versus Wade to make Gonzalez seem more moderate than he actually is.
What do you think, Emily?
You're not the first to say that, and I can understand. I personally don't think that sort of level of conspiracy is operating. I think the right thinks they can get someone who is much stronger in opposing abortion than Gonzalez. I mean, basically everybody else on the Bush shortlist that, you know, anyone in the media has heard of is much stronger. Several of these people have made, you know, really forceful statements that, you know, Roe is, quote, inimical to the Constitution, or have signed statements saying that they, in one case of a judge named Michael McConnell, has signed a statement saying that he would support a federal ban of abortion. So I think that it is quite sincere what the right is expressing, but I do think it's having precisely the effect that you're describing, which is that the left is thinking, huh, this guy is probably the best we're going to do, and we're going to keep quiet, at least for now, about these other problematic aspects of his record.
Ted, thanks for your call. My guest, Emily Bazelon, legal affairs contributor to Slate.com on WNYC. Her article from the other day, The Front Runners on Roe, What Bush's Shortlist Thinks About Abortion. And let's go down some of these others. You mentioned Michael McConnell, currently a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit. And you say he signed what kind of a statement?
He signed a statement in 1996 when he was a law professor supporting a constitutional amendment to ban abortion. And the statement includes this language, quote, abortion kills 1.5 million innocent human beings in America every year. We believe that the abortion license is a critical factor in America's virtue deficit.
But there's a difference between supporting the idea of a constitutional amendment and sitting on the bench and being willing to overturn the Supreme Court's Roe precedent.
You're absolutely right. There's a big difference. On the other hand, one of the things about being on the Supreme Court is you get to think about overturning Supreme Court precedent. And the only thing standing behind between you and doing that is whatever sort of principles of judicial restraint you espouse. When McConnell was nominated to the 10th Circuit Appellate Court, there were a whole group of liberal law professors who supported his nomination, and they said that he was a real proponent of judicial restraint and that on an appellate court, he would be bound by the Supreme Court law, and so he was, you know, a distinguished nominee and one who should be confirmed. But the calculus changes when you move up to the Supreme Court, because then you really do have lawmaking power.
And what about the non-Gonzalez Latino option, Emilio Garza?
Emilio Garza is a judge on the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, and he has abided by Supreme Court precedent, both in Roe and the 1992 decision in Casey, which said that states could impose some restrictions on abortion, but none that put an undue burden on a woman. But he has abided by those precedents reluctantly. And in both cases, he wrote a concurrence saying that he disagreed with Roe. His latest statement in a case in 1997 was that he would have allowed the people of the state of Louisiana to decide this issue for themselves. And that's really a way of saying that the whole notion of a federal right to abortion is suspect.
He, and as you quote him here, he wrote in that 1992 case, I would allow the people of the state of Louisiana to decide this issue for themselves. He called Roe and Casey, quote, inimical to the Constitution. So that's a pretty direct statement of his view of Roe in constitutional terms, and he would have the power to do something about that, or at least to cast one vote to do something about that on the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's absolutely right. And one of the other aspects of that opinion that you quoted from was he really questioned the whole basis for Casey. Casey is this 1992 decision I referred to before, and it was seen as this sort of centrist compromise where Justices Kennedy and O'Connor and Souter said, look, we may not personally agree with the federal right to abortion, but it's been the law at that point for almost 20 years, and we're not going to overturn it. Garza said in his opinion in 1997 that his reading of Kennedy's writings and other opinions led him to question whether Kennedy really still supported that stance. And so that really seems to open a door for overturning Casey and then possibly for overturning Roe.
And there are a few more on the short list who are similarly along the lines of McConnell and Garza: Edith Jones, Samuel Alito, Michael Luttig. And then there are a few who you put as question marks. Let's see.
There's one judge named Edith Brown Clement,
yes,
who's also on the Fifth Circuit, and her name has been in play especially since Justice O'Connor retired, the thinking being that Bush might want to name a woman to fill Justice O'Connor's seat. The funny thing about Edith Clement is that she just has this very sparse record. It's hard to tell what she thinks about almost anything, and as far as I could find in the public record of her writings, I really couldn't find anything she'd said about abortion. So she is a question mark, except to the degree that she's a staunch Republican. We really just don't have a sense at this point of what she thinks about
it. And another one like that is Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson, whose name we seem to hear a lot from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yes, that's right. And Harvey Wilkinson is an interesting possibility. He is seen as a little bit more moderate than some of these other judges, not just on abortion, but in other areas like environmental protection. The main strike against him is that he's 60 years old, and that may seem too advanced in age for the Bush administration if their goal is to appoint someone who will be on the court for quite a long time.
Emily Bazelon, legal affairs contributor to Slate.com, my guest for another few minutes. I want to play one more clip from one of the Sunday talk shows yesterday. This is Democratic Senator Pryor speaking on ABC This Week on this question that's going to come up, particularly regarding abortion, I think, of whether in the confirmation hearings the nominees can be questioned about their views on specific issues. And here is Senator Pryor saying why he thinks it should be permissible.
I don't want to give it because it is to some extent subjective and it does depend on the facts. You know, for example, if and I don't think this would ever happen, but if the White House were to nominate someone who thought Dred Scott should still be the law of the land, I would say, hey, that's extraordinary circumstances. But at the same time, if you look at the track record, everybody would agree that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a liberal. Everybody would say that Scalia is a conservative. And both of those nominations passed virtually unanimously.
And so what Senator Pryor is raising there is this whole issue that the Democrats have been focusing on, which is how conservative is radical conservative and how radical someone's views are in their judicial history should matter as to what the nature of the questioning is. Where's the line there?
It's very tricky, and this is an issue we've been grappling with, obviously, since Judge Bork was turned down for the court in 1987. I think that a lot of legal scholars today would draw a distinction between Scalia and Thomas as the far right wing of the court. Rehnquist is sort of quite conservative, very conservative, but maybe not quite as far to the right as them. And then O'Connor and Kennedy as being a little bit more in the center. And this question about what the Democrats should be able to ask the nominee, I think they have quite a good argument on their side that they should be able to ask a lot. The rules in the Judicial Code of Ethics about what judges can't talk about are much more limited than most judges care to interpret them as saying. What they really say is that judges can't talk about pending or impending cases. And there's been a kind of much broader sweep of interpretation of those rules where judges have decided not to talk about past decisions and not to talk about certain public issues that they feel perhaps in one form or another could one day come before them. And my own feeling is that those are really decisions that judges make for their own comfort level, because it's quite tricky to explain oneself verbally, and you can sort of trip up and say too far or say something revealing that you didn't mean to say. But those decisions really are about judges personally trying to protect themselves. They're not, there's really no legal or even sort of code of ethics basis for them.
So back to the clip of Senator Spector that we played at the top of the segment, where he proposed that if Rehnquist retires, O'Connor be made Chief Justice and lured back to the court that way. In 15 seconds, do you think there's any possibility of that?
Hey, you know, the speculations are just rampant right now. I've also heard predictions that one of these very recent nominees like Priscilla Owen or Janice Rogers Brown could be nominated to the court. And the thinking is, look, they just got confirmed by the Senate. They'll have an easy time. Doesn't matter that this was only a few weeks ago. So, if Senator Spector said it, I guess we should consider it as a possibility.
Or maybe it'll be Judge Judy. Who knows? Emily Bazelon, contributing editor for Legal Affairs at Slate.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
And we'll talk about the Valerie Plame case and the latest on that in a minute.